good afternoon. It's 12:07. This is Midday Matters on WBOI. I'm Sean Beter. Very glad to be with you on this Monday, March 4th. Joining me in studio, as usual, it's Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. Bob, how are you today?
Pretty good, Sean.
Pretty good. All right.
Well, surviving the sequester.
so far, anyway. Yep. And we hope you'll keep that energy. We are, in fact, on this program talking about the sequestration, I should say, on this hour of Midday Matters. We'll be exploring what it is and how it could affect Indiana as a whole, and of course our industries right here in the northeastern part of the state. And we want to hear from you today. Do you think the sequester is going to affect your bottom line? Are you worried about your company or perhaps your employer? Give us a call. Share with us how you think it could affect you. What are your worries? 260-452-1185. Toll free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. Joining me in studio for this hour, along with Bob Kaler, it's Dr. Doug Metter, professor of economics at the Keith Bussey School of Business and Entrepreneurial Leadership at the University of St. Francis. Dr. Metter, that's a mouthful. Thank you very much for joining us today.
It's good to be here, Sean.
With us by phone as well, we have Michael Hicks, director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at Ball State University. Professor Hicks, thank you very much for being with us today.
Good to be here.
We should probably start with the basics, because there have been so many numbers thrown out in the past few weeks and months, along with a whole lot of politics as well. Michael Hicks, let's ask the most basic question. What is this sequestration that the President Obama signed into effect on Friday?
Well, I think that the sequester that we saw Friday was the second half of a Budget Control Act that was passed last year that continued government spending until after the 2012 election cycle. And, of course, the first half of that was the tax increases that took place January 1st. They included a redaction of the Bush tax cuts on the wealthiest, about 2.5% of American households. And then a restoration of the Social Security or FICA tax, which was a 2 percentage points increase on what households pay. That took effect on January 1st. The spending cuts, which were designed to be very onerous to government operations, were delayed by mutual consent until Friday, and that delay did not result in a compromise, and so the $85 billion tax cut, which was split 50-50 between defense spending and non-defense discretionary spending, took place Friday, and that's what has everybody all a Twitter today.
So to speak. Doug Metter, we've heard there's been a confluence of a lot of big economic issues or crises, if you want to call them that, in the last few months. So we've heard about the fiscal cliff. We've heard about sequestration. The sequestration is very different from those other issues. I mean, we also have another budget fight coming up here, is that correct?
Yes, it is. And they've agreed, at least what I've read, they have agreed to put that budget fight off for a few more months to deal with this. And so when that issue comes up on lifting the debt ceiling, it probably will sail through with a new deadline.
This is only, Michael Hicks, you mentioned this is the kind of the second half of this first part, I guess, of the sequestration process, but this can still be stopped, correct? We're only kind of really starting to pull back some of this $85 billion in federal funding.
Well, I think Congress has the power to, at almost any moment, to step back in and adjust whatever they have done. Of course, the real effects begin at some point once government workers are furloughed, if contractors are not paid, if travel doesn't take place. Once those real effects occur, the economy will start to feel some effect with it. But yeah, certainly, I think rather unlikely, frankly, Congress could agree to some sort of budget, but we haven't had a budget since April of 2009. And so government's been operating on essentially continuing resolutions, lifting the debt ceiling and spending as under existing rules that guided growth in what we often call entitlements and growth in military spending and non-discretionary spending that have been double-digit in each of the past, in nominal terms, in each of the past 4 years. And so
they're essentially passing short extensions of previous budget spending.
Right. Every year or so, we hit a debt ceiling. More frequently, the Congress agrees to extend that debt ceiling, and spending goes on automatic pilot. And we're near 4 years of automatic pilot. Next month will be the four-year anniversary of the last budget that has been passed by the United States Congress.
Doug Metter, before we, I do want to spend most of the hour here exploring what the effects of this could be for our state and for our region. But before we get to that, what in your eyes has been the hang-up here in terms of Congress not being able to negotiate? It seems like there weren't even, well, Congress was in recess the week that President Obama signed this sequestration order.
We just really seem to have a deep political divide, deeper, the deepest that I have seen in my lifetime. And I'm thinking back even to 1968 in Chicago in the Democratic National Convention, where they almost had two parties, one liberal, one somewhat conservative. But even that doesn't compare with what we have now. The Republican Party has an extremely conservative faction. And in a certain sense, they're calling a lot of the shots. But on the Democratic side, too, there's a very liberal segment. And it's like the two extremes are talking rather than the two more closely allied groups.
Mm-hmm.
And that really seems to just to dominate the whole thing. We've run into ideological differences from which no one is willing to back down.
Michael Hicks, does that sound about right? I mean, it was the intention in? Did you see either side really willing to negotiate in the weeks leading up to Friday's order?
No, I don't think so. I think Doug hit the nail on the head. I'm not sure about the political divide being as extreme. It's very narrowly focused, perhaps, now. We don't disagree about national defense policy as nearly as we did in the 60s. Right now, it's all about budgets, and we really have two groups that have very philosophically differing view on spending and taxation patterns. And neither side has been able to convince a stunning majority of Americans, 52%, for example, that their side ought to be in charge of the budgetary process. And I think that is what's leading us to these impasses.
We're talking today about sequestration, also known as the sequester. You may have heard that term thrown around the last few weeks. And we want to hear from you. How do you think it could affect you and your life? Or maybe you're worried about your business, your company, or perhaps your employer. Give us a call and share your thoughts. 260-452-1185. Toll free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's @middaymatters. Before we get into more Indiana-specific concerns after this coming break, Michael Hicks, you touched on it just a little bit. Can you give us some broad strokes about what exactly sequestration cuts? You mentioned defense spending. You mentioned discretionary spending. What exactly does that mean on a broad federal level?
Right. Well, if anybody knows exactly what's going to happen, they're lying. The parts of this are fairly easy to predict. I'll start with the easy things to predict. The spending cuts on the very richest Americans are going to have some decline in some consumption. But it's not going to be extreme or noticeable to the average American. unless you work in probably in a luxury industry like a boats, sort of the same thing we saw 20 years ago when we had a luxury tax. You're not going to see much effect of that. The real effect of the January 1st or January 2nd agreements on tax increases are going to befall households that are now seeing a fairly significant return to fairly significant payroll taxes, a 2 full percentage point increase in payroll tax. That's about $800 for a household making $40,000 a year, has a predictable effect on things like the purchases of consumer durables and non-durables at Walmart and elsewhere. We're seeing that already play out. I think we'll see it in the job numbers in the next few months. The more difficult to determine effect, both nationwide and in Indiana, will be the effect of the trimming of budgets in the defense and non-defense areas, because we don't know really where they're going to come from. The administration gets to have a choice in that, and they're likely to use this rightfully, as anybody would, to make some political statement about the effect of these spending cuts. So they're likely to be targeted some places that are annoying, such as airport lines and things like that. And so
we heard last week in several press conferences, long lines at the TSA, potential furloughs of air traffic and controllers, things like that.
Right, and that's sort of the politics with a small p part of this that's, you could expect from either side. I mean, I think there is some, Department of Homeland Security has already fired a few people for releasing prisoners, who are awaiting deportation. But I think for the most part, we're not apt to see an awful lot until a contract is voided for an engine. And that's going to happen in a town in Louisiana or Fort Wayne or Columbus. We're not going to see effects until the federal workers are furloughed, and those places where we have a very heavy concentration of federal workers, such as in Indianapolis or in down by Crane Naval Air Station, where we're going to see a really big impact on spending in the local economy.
We do need to take a break here. We'll continue this discussion and try to drill down a little bit more into how sequestration affects Indiana and perhaps even our region or what anyway could happen. If you'd like to share your thoughts with us today, we hope you'll get involved in the conversation. 260-452-1185 or toll free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's @middaymatters. Stay with us. Back in 2 minutes.
People are living under the illusion that the American dream is working for them, and it's rigged by the guys at the tippy top.
Laura Dern plays a naive whistleblower on the HBO series Enlightened. On the next Fresh Air, her co-creator and co-star Mike White tells us about the season finale. Join us.
Fresh Air weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
This week on American Roots, we dig through the vinyl with those behind the music, including the late great Atlantic Records producer Jerry Wexler, all about his love of R&B. Also a stop in Shreveport to talk to record man Stan Lewis about Southern Soul. Finally, a fanatic 78 RPM collector. This and more revolutions per minute on American Roots from PRX.
Monday night at 7 on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Reinbold and Anderson, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Take charge of your financial future. More information on Reinbold and Anderson on the web at reinboldandanderson.com. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by United Way of Allen County, helping kids succeed in school with 15 education network partners, offering ways to mentor or tutor a child. UWEducationNetwork.org.
It's 12:22. This is Midday Matters on WBOI Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter. Very glad to be with you on this Monday afternoon. With me in studio, it's Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel and Doug Metter, professor of economics at the Keith Bussey School of Business and Entrepreneurial Leadership, the University of St. Francis. Joining us by phone for our discussion today, Michael Hicks, director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at Ball State University. Gentlemen, thanks very much to all of you for being with us. We do invite our listeners to join this conversation about sequestration this hour. It's 260-452-1185 or toll free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters at nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. Currently nobody in the phone bank, so if you give us a call, we'll get you through as quickly as we can. We talked during the last segment of the program kind of in broader strokes about what sequestration is. We want to try to drill down into what effects could we see in Indiana and even in our region here. And Doug Metter, I want to put that statewide question to you first. As we heard Mike Hicks say in the last segment, it's hard to know exactly what kind of effects some of this sequestration will bring us here in the Hoosier State. But what basic, what outline of effects can you see once we start to maybe feel these effects? I know the White House released numbers last week, I believe it was, talking about fewer work-study jobs, Head Start being reduced, and some furloughs for DOD positions and National Guard bases as well. Can you expand on that a bit?
National Guard bases. We have the National Guard bases, and those could possibly be impacted. Here in Fort Wayne, we've seen the argument go back and forth for quite a while about the air base that the National Guard has here. Nothing is ever for certain, though, and there is a certain amount of discretion as to how they allocate that. Had an article in the Chronicle of Higher Education just recently talking about possible cutbacks to student loan programs and whatnot. And again, down in Indy, Bloomington, here in Fort Wayne, we have quite a college industry in the state, and that could be impacted. We've seen enrollments falling already due to the higher cost of college. Now, with the potential for less support, we could see even more of that going on. However, that's not going to happen today. Students are funded through the end of the semester. What's going to happen next fall is when we might begin to notice something on that. Some of our defense industries here in Indiana, again, they're under contracts now to deliver certain goods. Once those are delivered and it's now time to for the government to place a new order, we may see something happening. On some of the other things like air traffic controllers and whatnot, there is the potential for furloughs, as Mike was saying, where suddenly you may be told you're only going to work 9 days every 2 weeks instead of 10. It's going to have an impact on consumer spending. We're just, in a certain sense, we're just going to have to kind of wait and see how this all begins to pan out. Mm. Luckily, Indiana is among those states where the federal spending as a percentage of our state GDP is relatively small. We aren't going to be hit nearly as hard as, say, Alaska or Virginia.
And in fact, a big deal has been made in the last few years about Indiana's relative economic strength or at least a relative strength in state government in terms of tax receipts, things like that. Will that strength perhaps absorb some of the impact of this, or could it?
It should. It should absorb some of it. Indiana, the Hoosiers tend to be a pretty conservative bunch, and they don't get too far off base. So I would expect us to absorb any cuts that we have. Not easily, but without the difficulty that some other places might.
Michael Hicks, I want to turn to you a bit. What kind of money are we talking about in terms of the federal expenditure on Indiana?
Well, if we get our population adjusted share, it could be as high as $2 billion a year. Then that's out of an economy of about $255 billion.
Hmm.
So it's a little bit more than 0.5%, perhaps. At its worst, when you consider the ripple through effect of this, but I think it depends entirely where the spending cuts are made. You know, as Doug mentioned, I think it's going to be concentrated in a few places. So if you own a fast food restaurant or retail stores outside of Crane Naval Air Station, you're going to start feeling pain by the time the leaves come back in the trees, because those federal workers are now going to take about a 15% to 20% pay cut through they're being forced to take unpaid leave, essentially, and that's going to cut back on discretionary spending there. If you're outside of Grissom Air Force Base or if you're outside Camp Atterbury, you're probably going to start feeling the pain. Now, the actual uniformed military members who are on active duty are not subject to this. However, most people don't know that many National Guard officers and NCOs are actually technically civil service employees on temporary duty. So they may wear their uniform during the week, but they're still subject to these furloughs. And so you could start seeing impacts there in the next 60-90 days. And then, as Doug mentioned, as contracts are not renewed, and these could be big contracts for engine parts out of Cummins or Rolls-Royce, or they could be, refitting of Humvees in Fort Wayne or Kokomo, or they could just be service contracts to help provide Veterans Administration support officers at the county level. So it's really hard to know where the impact's going to be right now. I think it's safe to say, though, that over the coming years we're going to see downsizing in lots of places, and it's going to be painful to many communities, regardless of whether or not we have the high focus, high media attention sequester as a process of getting there.
Bob Kaler.
Well, I think it was last week that Ben Bernanke said that he and the Fed expect 0.6% cut in the growth, or smaller rate of growth in the GDP this year, and that dovetails with the number that Mike Hicks was using just there. I think let's to go even a little bit more sector by sector. One that I paid some attention to last week was healthcare, and there's a giveth and a taketh away at work there. The penalty under the sequestration is that Medicare reimbursements to providers are going to be cut about 1%, and that's a big hit for hospitals. Lutheran Hospital or Lutheran Health Network gets 45% of its patient revenue from Medicare, but at the same time, just around the corner, just 10 months away, there's going to be a huge expansion of the insured in America through Obamacare, and that's going to be a considerable revenue boost for healthcare providers. So that's one place where I see in the near term the effects as being about a wash. Mm-hmm.
We want to hear from our listeners today. If you have a question or comment about sequestration and its effects on Hoosiers throughout the state, if you think it's going to affect you, tell us what your concerns are. 260-452-1185 or toll free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's @MiddayMatters. Doug Metter, I want to expand, come off just a little bit from what Bob Kaler was saying there. Just looking at kind of the broad outline of of cuts in terms of what could be affected in Indiana. It looks largely like it's focused on defense, on education-related sectors, and on healthcare. Very high attention issues that we focused a lot on the last few years. Coincidence or not?
These are three non-discretionary parts of the overall budget, and it's the non-discretionary that's a big part of this sequester. We have moved away from some of the panic, I think, where planes were going to stop flying. But the choice of education and healthcare are two things that are very close to everybody's concern. Whether these were, it would be easy on one hand to say these were politically motivated choices. They may be politically motivated choices to talk about, but the sequester is across the entire budget. There's a percentage that's known across the budget, whether it's discretionary, non-discretionary, exempt, or whatnot. It's kind of a matter of what are we going to focus on. Nobody has brought up any of the concerns about what might happen to the Department of Agriculture, but they're going to be part of it. Nobody has brought up about food inspectors. Well, that food inspectors, I guess, was brought up at an earlier time, but what are we going to look at? And the outline for the United States has been we need to improve our education because we're falling behind in some areas. The outlook that has been very important is healthcare and access to healthcare. So it makes sense that these might be areas of concern that we want to focus on.
Mike Hicks, are the media, including public radio as well, focusing on I guess you could call them the sexier issues of the day when we highlight what could happen as sequestration takes hold?
Well, I think that's by design. The sequestration was designed to be the most politically unpalatable set of cuts possible. And in the hopes that we would come to some negotiated agreement about what other types of adjustments that we might take. And I think most Americans, an overwhelming share of Americans probably are extraordinarily dissatisfied with the tax system. It has far too many loopholes. I mean, both Ball State University and St. Francis University paid more taxes last year in federal income taxes than did General Electric. So if either one of our schools, let a summer group come in and, use the campus facilities for a conference during the summer, we have to pay taxes on that because we don't have 4,000 lawyers and accountants designed to craft loopholes for us. So we just pay the taxes on those activities. That nobody can really think that that's a good state of affairs. Same thing with spending cuts. I mean, these defense cuts and the cuts on things like TSA or on grants to the Department of Education, even if you think the Department of Education ought to be eliminated, very few people don't think that some sort of grant program ought to still not be continued. And so what we have seen through the sequestration process was a design to push good leadership in Washington, D.C. And I think the big lesson from this is you can't legislate good leadership. It really is going to come from the men and women that are there, not from what they do to force themselves into agreement. And so I can hardly blame the media for saying, I'm going to focus on these things when they were designed to be high-focus issues.
We have a caller on the line here that we'll get to before we have to take another break for the news. If you'd like to get in touch with us, it's 260-452-1185 or toll free 800-471-9264. Let's open the phones and go to Jimmy. Jimmy, welcome to Midday Matters.
Hello.
Hi, Jimmy. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. Simple question. At 67 years old, never quite understood why we have created a government that is too big to fail. So my question is, how and why have we gotten ourselves into the pickle of having so many government jobs? I would feel that half of which could be let to private industry, public, I don't mean public, but parochial, not-for-profit organizations, the post office. You know, St. Joe Hospital was run as a not-for-profit organization for many years and served the community well, treated their employees well, had great success in healing people. So why can't we get back, or what would it take to get back to more public sector jobs instead of having the government deliver the mail? That's pretty simple stuff.
You mean more private sector jobs as opposed to government?
Yep, I meant to say that.
Just making sure, Jimmy. We appreciate the question, and let's put it to both of our guests today. Doug Metter, let's start with you. A very big question, and certainly a lot of government jobs affected by this, but also down the chain, a lot of private sector jobs as well.
I think you have to go back to the Depression, and coming out of the Depression, the system failed. Markets didn't work. We got stuck at a really bad place for the economy. World War II ends. Soldiers come back. A little kick up with Korea. More soldiers come back. And there's just this basic worry about returning to the Depression. And the government took it upon itself, the Full Employment Act of 1946. For the first time, the United States government felt a responsibility and authorized itself to try to provide some stabilization to the economy. And so the public sector began to grow, and it grew, and it grew, and it grew. And by the time we get to the mid-70s, and a lot of the memory of the Depression had disappeared, and people had, you know, started looking at how successful they had been, they began thinking, you know, there's probably not nearly the need for a shepherd, so to speak. And thus began the rift between government can solve the problem and government is the problem.
And Mike Hicks, certainly a lot of folks, well, within and outside of government, have been highlighting this issue in the last few years.
Right. I mean, I think that's the fundamental question. I don't think anybody's talking about slashing government employment by 50%, but there are certainly big just make two points. One is there are certainly a lot of things the government is attempting to do that's just not doing exceptionally well at the federal level. Education is a great example. We spend some $80 billion a year on the Department of Education. They do a very good job of collecting statistics that probably would cost them a $5, $7 million per year to do. And then the rest of the money is simply tax money that's gathered, processed through a huge bureaucratic apparatus, and returned back to states in the form of grants. And so it's not clear to me, even if you would like a very big government, if having a very, very big federal government is the choice that we would wish. And so, I mean, I think there's a fundamental argument about what government should do, but it's more nuanced than that. Even in very conservative districts, in many places in the country, taxes are very high on local expenditures because people see value to those expenditures locally, and they get to choose between the things that they would wish to have in their community based on a variety of features. And so I think the struggle now isn't so much about how big government is, but where it is. Is it a local government, state government, or federal government, this fiscal federalism issue? And then what is the scope of the federal government? And I think the scope of federal government getting into education riles lots of folks. And the Energy Department, you know, has been winterizing. We've been winterizing homes for about more than the average lifespan of the average home structure in the United States. And so we haven't got anywhere with it. And so I think those are the fundamental questions that we're playing through our head. And I think the sequester was designed to force Congress into some goals about the scope and size of government, about the appropriateness of the tax rate that would be widely agreed upon, because they're out there. The problem is that both sides in this fight see this as an epic duel to the short-term death over which side wins. And I suspect this is a perpetual problem in or debate in our republic. Has been around since the Federalist Papers and Hamilton and Madison.
We're talking about sequestration today, how it could affect Indiana and our region in the northeastern part of the state. We need to take a quick break for the news. When we return, we'll take a question from Steve, and we'll continue the conversation. If you want to get involved, give us a call, 260-452-1185, or toll-free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Stay with us, back in 4 minutes.
In Ludington, Michigan, people love to watch the car ferry heading to Wisconsin.
They'll look out that way and say, oh, look, the smokestack's going. They're getting ready to sail. It's a big deal around here.
But the last coal-fired ferry has an uncertain future.
If the car ferry didn't sail, it'll be a different place here.
That story later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's weekdays starting at 4 on WBOI Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah D'Elia with WBOI News. Lawmakers are returning to the Indiana State House for the second half of this year's legislative session. The biggest job they face upon returning today from a short mid-session break is completing work on a new two-year state budget. A state Senate committee will begin hearings on the budget plan this week. Senators will have the next several weeks to consider changes to the House-approved budget plan that calls for $700 million more in school and road spending than proposed by Governor Mike Pence and leaves out his proposed 10% cut to the state's income tax rate. Republicans who control the Senate and House have been wary of the tax cut plan, but Pence argues the state can afford the move and that it would spur economic growth. Legislators involved in a comprehensive overhaul of Indiana's criminal code say balance is key to its success as the measure heads to the Senate. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports.
A complete rewrite of the state's criminal code has involved representatives from nearly every sector of the criminal justice system, including prosecutors, public defenders, law enforcement, judges, and legislators. It creates harsher penalties for the worst offenders while lessening prison time for some nonviolent crimes and putting a greater emphasis on rehabilitation. The bill overwhelmingly passed the House and now faces the Indiana Senate. Bloomington Democratic Representative Matt Pierce, one of the measure's sponsors, says keeping the bill relatively unchanged is vital.
If people see it as an opportunity to turn into a Christmas tree and add in all their kind of pet criminal law issues onto the bill, it will collapse.
Bedford Republican Brent Steele, who will sponsor the bill in the Senate, says he will urge any groups or members who want to change the bill to wait until the summer.
This is 90% of the bill, and it won't become effective until another year. So we've got another year to tweak it. But it's so important that we get at least this structure through. This is the skeleton.
Steele and Pierce say with an effective date of 2014, there will be what's called a trailer bill next session to address any problems discovered in the law if it passes. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
And a newly revitalized fort that features 19th century reenactments, tours, and craft shops is drawing thousands of visitors in Fort Wayne. Old Fort was built in 1976 as a recreation of an 1816 fortress, but it had fallen on hard times by 2004. The Journal-Gazette reports that a group of citizens formed the nonprofit group Historic Fort Wayne Incorporated to make repairs to the neglected fort and spice it up with colonial-themed events. The fort now offers reenactments of battles and pioneer life, a wood shop, and a blacksmith shop. Donations have helped with the fort's maintenance costs. The nonprofit group is also looking for volunteers to help do maintenance work. Taking a quick look at the WBOY weather forecast, partly sunny skies expected throughout the day with a high near 34 degrees. Tonight, a 30% chance of some snow showers, mostly cloudy with a low of 27. You're listening to 89.1 FM WBOY Fort Wayne and streaming online at nipr.fm. Now back to Midday Matters with your host, Sean Beter.
We'll be right back. quarter till 1 o'clock. This is Midday Matters on WBOI Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. We're talking about sequestration on today's hour of the program. With us to help with the discussion, Michael Hicks, director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at Ball State University, and Doug Metter, professor of economics at the Keith Bussey School of Business and Entrepreneurial Leadership at the University of St. Francis. And we want you to join the conversation today. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 260-452-1185. Toll free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. A very patient caller on the line here. Let's see if we can go to Steve. Steve, welcome to Midday Matters.
Good afternoon, boy. When you picked up the line, the volume went way down. There,
oh no! So. We'll try to speak a little louder here. You're on the air, Steve. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Maybe I have missed it, but, and hopefully someone there knows the answer to this question. But for the last 30 days, we have heard from NPR and from other news sources how the FAA and the TSA and USDA inspectors, all the mid and low level employees are going to be forced to take off one day per week. Has that reached into the legislative director or the chief of staff for all the 635 congressmen and senators? Are their staffs being reduced by the sequestration and the alleged across the board cuts?
I don't believe I've heard anything to that effect. Bob Kaler, you raised your hand.
I've heard that there's a 30, at least I heard this from the Air National Guard, is that there's a 30-day implementation period. So it may be the end of March, the beginning of April, before you actually see these furloughs take effect. And you are entitled to your cynicism when it comes to asking about furloughs at the in Congress or the executive branch. I don't anticipate those coming.
Go ahead, Steve.
I say we certainly couldn't give the actual representatives any more time off because they get enough of that as it is. But they all have staffs of 6 to 10 to 12 people that are drawing federal money. So.
Well, and Michael Hicks, we've heard a lot of folks actually make the same point that Steve's making here, but so far no word on staff reductions in Congress or the White House or elsewhere at the top levels.
No, right. It's difficult for me. These budget games are fairly old. I was a young Army officer when nobody got paid on the last day of the fiscal year, September 30th. Payday was shifted by a day so that all of the pay for all of the armed forces would fall into a later fiscal year, and magically we would balance the budget that year. I think these are just part of the histrionics involved in trying to get us to agree to something. And I think both sides have a lot of folks saying, I think you ought to hold tight to your whatever your principles are until somebody goes bust. And, the good news is that we do have a long ways to go before we actually go bust, before we have to stop borrowing money. And there's an awful lot of government services that can be dissipated without ill effect because they're not effective. They're not doing anything for the economy other than supporting some employees. And I think identifying those, though, is going to be a very difficult process in this political environment.
Steve, we appreciate your call. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. Have a good day. 260-452-1185 or toll free at 800-471-9264. Bob Kaler.
Well, something that I've been thinking about through watching this is that people in Indiana may be spoiled by seeing budget discipline in state government and in local government because the difference between this and sequestration, I think a big part of it is that the executives at the local level and at the state level have a vested interest in making cuts work, or at least making a reduction in the increase in spending work. And it's exactly the opposite at the national level. The executive branch and Congress both have an interest in making it appear as messed up as possible so that they can exert pressure to get the deal that they're looking for.
Well, and even politics aside, Doug Metter, the federal budget, the U.S. economy at large is a much bigger, more complex beast than say the Indiana budget, the Indiana economy.
You know, much larger. And the thing to remember too is that the state of Indiana. Primary purpose is to provide services. And again, I'd go back to the Full Employment Act of 46. The primary purpose of the federal government is to provide stability and to lead us to full employment, stable prices, and economic growth. Perhaps we've gotten a bit carried away with that idea of trying to provide stability rather than services. But even providing services, it goes to, I think, the difference in geography. My state legislator, I can drive by his house. I can call him up. I might see him at church or, you know, in the supermarket. My representative in Congress, you know, if I ever see him, it would be something, and the amount of time that he spends here. He doesn't live here. He lives in Washington, maintains an official domicile here, but for all practical purposes, he lives there.
Well, and that's common for most, you know, most U.S. congressmen and senators,
right,
as well,
and
these days.
It just goes to the, you know, I think that the local legislator is much more aware of his constituents' feelings than what the Washington representative is.
We've got another caller on the line here. And if you'd like to get your voice in on the conversation in the last few minutes of the program, we'll try to get to you. 260-452-1185. Toll free at 800-471-9264. Let's open the phones and go to Daniel. Daniel, welcome to Midday Matters.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. And good to see Dr. Metter there. He's had me in class, so he may have heard some of what I'm going to mention more than he may have enjoyed hearing, but the question about how the sequestration might be affecting my life, well, I've mentioned before that I've been working trying to be an entrepreneur in renewable ammonia energy for our area, and I don't want to be in the ranks of Solyndra, and I think private industry could accomplish some of what I suggest on their own. But I see from the federal government less opportunity for grants or less opportunity for guaranteed loans that encourage business to take on some of the risk, because the risk is being shared with the government as well. So those are how it could affect what I've been trying to do with some business ideas around here. So.
And Daniel, we appreciate the perspective, and Doug Metter, I think we have to put this one to you first. We've heard tell of fewer opportunities available for grants or small business administration loans. This could hurt folks who want to start that business, want to be entrepreneurs.
Oh yes, it definitely could. But again, it goes to. There's a certain amount of money allocated. It's going to get cut some. In the final analysis, though, it's always about making a convincing story and doing your due diligence and coming up with those forms. There has always been competition. There's never going to be enough money to give everybody who wants to start a business a chance. And the competition will get, let's say, a little tighter, because there will be less money available. But with respect to funding entrepreneurs and new opportunities, I would argue that it goes, oh, in a certain sense, it's going to force those budding entrepreneurs to do their homework. a little bit more thoroughly.
spoken like a professor.
Right, and I catch the drift too. So,
Daniel, we appreciate the call. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
All right, bye bye. Just a few minutes left in the program here. Mike Hicks, we kind of going off of this point. Not only might there be a tighter competition for prospective entrepreneurs, but also less money for customers to perhaps spend on those new innovations, those new products.
Oh, I think there's no doubt about that. And I think the larger budgetary issues that we face will ultimately, if not dealt with more wisely than we have seen, continue to plague us for some time. We have the benefit of being a very large republic that has always paid its bills, and that allows us the opportunity to borrow money at essentially zero or even negative real interest rates today. That is a transient period in our history if we maintain a budget or total debt and a growing deficit. At some point, the interest rate on our debt's going to grow, and it could explode. And the process of paying it down, or at least convincing our creditors that we are serious about doing so, is going to entail some period of belt tightening. I wish that would be at some future date after unemployment rate dropped down to 5.5%, but I'm afraid that we may not have the luxury of time that we did 2 or 3 years ago to demonstrate that long-term fiscal probity.
And just about 90 seconds left in the program here, Mike Hicks, I want to stay with you. Kind of looking at public reaction to this so far, you know, we've certainly heard a bit of outrage, but in terms of the markets, they don't seem to be really reacting to this latest crisis. Things seem to be speeding along relatively well, consistently on Wall Street, and we've even seen some foreign markets reach new highs recently.
Well, I think the fact is it's not the crisis that we think it is. We are going to have to go through more budget contortions for several more years. And so I think most consumers, most taxpayers, most folks in financial markets are used to it. The real question is, can we do it a little bit smarter next time and do things like fix the tax code that majority of Americans would support? A majority of lobbyists don't support it, but a majority of taxpayers probably do. And think about cuts to places in government that are just not doing what they were designed to do.
We've reached the end of this program, unfortunately, but I'd like to thank Michael Hicks, Director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at Ball State University, Doug Metter, Professor of Economics at the Keith Bussey School of Business and Entrepreneurial Leadership at the University of St. Francis, and of course, Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. Gentlemen, thanks to all of you for being with us on the program today. Thanks to our listeners for tuning in and for sharing your thoughts with us this hour. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios. It's WBOI Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester. Fresh Air is next. Have a great day.